The Legal Lowdown on Kerry Today.
Yeah, Miriam McGillicuddy is with us on the line for the Legal Lowdown. Miriam, good morning to you and thanks for joining us again.
Good morning, Gerry, and good morning, listeners. How are you?
Lots of queries, lots of comments, so we'll tear straight into them, Miriam. A listener gets in touch and says, I have a question for the Legal Lowdown. My father passed away and I am executor. In the will, I inherited the dwelling house and my brother inherited the farmland adjacent to the dwelling house. The land has been rented out for over a decade to a nearby farmer. I'm wondering, is my brother entitled to the rent money from the farm immediately on the death of my father or only on the date of the grant of probate being issued? Or to put it another way, will I have to get the backdated payments from the farmer when probate comes through, or do I as executor get to keep that money?
Yeah, I mean, that's very interesting, and it's one of the usual conundrums that comes up when one is dealing with estates. And I suppose there's wider issues there because the valuation date for tax purposes, say for capital inheritance tax, would be after the date of the grant to probate. So one mightn't want to ensure that one is taking rent money from land before the grant to probate because it could kick in the obligation to pay inheritance tax. So one has to be careful around all this area. And the executor is a trustee, but he'd usually hang on to the rent money in the estate, and the estate would pay whatever income tax is applicable, which is usually a 20% in relation to estates. And then he would distribute it in accordance with the will after the date of the grant to probate, usually. But as I say, it's something one needs to be careful about because it may kick in other taxes if you were to hand out the rent money from the farm directly to the brother straight away, and he mightn't have the benefit of tax reliefs. So it ideally would need to be looked at carefully with the solicitor and or accountant in those kind of situations.
Yeah, okay, important to get that one definitely checked out.
He's right to be kind of wary about it and it being responsible as an executor. I mean, he's saying, or do I as an executor get to keep the money? But unfortunately, he's a trustee for the estate and manages it for the benefit of himself and the beneficiaries,
Okay, a friend of another listener is looking at separation. What are the additional steps to be taking? Do they have to meet and agree a mutual separation agreement?
Yeah, I mean, many couples arrange it between themselves and then bring it to their solicitors to put it into a legal format or a consent divorce. But if people are having difficulty, there's loads of help out there, like the mediation service, where you can sit down with somebody and they'll help the family to come to an arrangement when they're separating to maximise their own position, each position of every member of the family, and the tax and social welfare positions as well. If they can't get agreement through the mediation process, they could approach their solicitors and try and get an agreement through solicitors and a separation agreement drawn up. I mean, the beauty of the separation agreement is that it does enable people to move on, get mortgages, maybe refinance to get separate dwelling houses or access to separate accommodation. If all else fails, then it involves going to court for a contested divorce, which really people want to avoid if at all possible, because it can work out very expensive. So as I say, first port to call, the mediation. Number two, solicitors to try and negotiate a separation agreement. And number three, applying to the court to get a solution from the court. But again, 90% of cases settle outside of court on the steps or before it, as it were. And it's only a limited number actually go in before the judge to actually be decided by a judge. So, as I say, there's a range of options out there. But if people can meet and agree themselves, and often couples do, and sign a little piece of paper that they've agreed what's to happen between them, and it's great if they can do that and bring it to their solicitors to put it into a formal
It saves all sorts of financial and emotional and other pain down the line. Sometimes, because of sometimes the acrimonious details of a breakup themselves, it all gets entangled and people can't see the wood from the trees, but the sooner it comes to agreement, the better.
That's right. Really. And what we find sometimes is people, what people are kind of wary because they feel maybe the other person is pulling the wool over their eyes or, you know, trying to get a fast one on them.
Yeah.
But often if both of them go to get legal advice and then they're aware of the situation and it doesn't cost that much. And then they can come back and say, well, look, this is the way we'll do it. And that's a big help and a cheap way of doing it as well.
Yeah. Okay. All right. On the lottery, Miriam, this is a good news, bad news situation, this one. What happens if one person passes away? Who gets the money? And I'm assuming that's if a couple of people win it together or... What happens? Does it go to the person's estate?
I was just wondering about that. Was it a syndicate that we're talking about? But basically, if the person has the lotto ticket and they pass away, actually, that's what happened in that lovely movie, Waking Ned. You know, if the person passes away, then they're entitled to, their estate is entitled to the money, strictly speaking, because they've won it. So, and it's funny because I often put a catch-all on, into all wills. I always say, all the rest, residue and remainder of my property that I die possessed of, I give, devise and bequeath. In other words, there's a little safety net at the end of the will, and I always say it's to catch the lotto win. Like if one if one has the wins the lotto and then dies of the shock, that one has some way of passing it on to one's relatives, as it were. But that's bottom line. If you've won, you've won, and that should go to your estate. And even if you're a syndicate, there might be a question of whether it goes to the syndicate or your estate, and there might be a little row about that.
Yeah,
but I'd be contending that it belongs to the person's estate and that they should be getting the money there.
Where can you check to see if a right of way has been registered? Asked another listener.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lovely web, well, not lovely, but it is a good website, landdirect.ie. And in there, it has all the registered land in Ireland. So one can register as a guest user and you can see in your locality the rights, whether a right-of-way has been registered. So if you're curious, have you a right-of-way over adjoining land or, you know, is your road, your private road down to the public road registered? You can check it there on landdirect.ie. As a registered user, and of course rights of way are very clearly marked on the land registry maps, thanks be to God. They're in the pink yellow line, and they're hard to miss. Like, you'll see them straight away that it is a right of way and it has been registered.
Okay. 1855, our next caller wants to go back to. There's an incorrect record of a family member being arrested. Now the record is available in the public records. Can one get that corrected? How could she go about getting it removed? Would she have to go to the Minister for Justice on that one?
Yeah.
Like, this is, Ireland was a different jurisdiction. It was under control of England.
That's right.
Back then.
So, very interesting. I mean, she could approach the people, the keeper of the records, as it were, whatever government department it is, and notify them of the inaccuracy. And
would she have evidence to prove it was inaccurate?
Yeah, I mean, with evidence, and get them to look into it themselves, and they may actually alter it themselves. But if not, it might be a matter for the Minister for Justice, because they have given pardons to people.
Yeah, I was thinking of that.
Yeah, exactly.
People who were falsely accused and sometimes executed for murder.
Incredible, yeah. And that they posthumously get their memories, I suppose, respected or their innocence, as it were.
Yeah.
So it may be similar to that. But often, if one has difficulty, I mean, approaching maybe the county council and getting them to pass a motion, which can be popped up to the Minister for Justice. But again, she'd have to have the detailed historic evidence that she could show to people, or he or she can show to people there. But there should be, I mean, obviously, public records, they'd be concerned about their accuracy. And if they had evidence that they were inaccurate, they might just change them on the ground, as it were.
Okay. I have a property in an estate. The board of management are all resigning. No one will go on the board. What are the consequences for my property?
Yeah, I mean, this is a difficult enough one. A lot of estates were managed, the common areas are managed by a limited company, limited by guarantee. Now, the most important thing is that that company be kept alive and, you know, that it would have directors, etc. Now, if the people on the estate aren't actually engaging with the board of management, they could get a kind of a professional company to come in and do it for them and manage it for them if no one from the actual estate is willing to go on board. Very often this results, actually, what this scenario here that we're talking about here results in maybe having a board of management, which maybe is managed by accountants or whatever, and yeah. then a separate residence committee. But that's not ideal either, because you've you're a limited company and then you've got this residence association. Now, what very often happens at the end of the day is that the council take the estate in charge. But again, you need a large number of your people in the estate to petition the council to do that.
Yeah, and that can be a lengthy process as well.
Lengthy.
It can take several years.
It can. But what that would involve is maybe transferring the land from that limited company into the to the council for all the world, and that it's public property then, you know, with public rights away to it. Now, the only thing is...
If you don't have a board of management in place, you will never get the council to take it over. That's one thing for certain.
Well, not necessarily. So they have in the past, if a company's gone defunct.
Oh, yes.
But, Jerry, the most important thing is to keep the company alive, because they have the title to the common areas. And it's very complicated if they die.
If they don't, and you have to try and
resurrect them, it's very expensive.
Very hard.
So the important thing is to make sure that company is kept alive. And you can, you know, approach the accountants for the company and, you know, make sure their annual fee is paid. And ideally, a lot of companies as well might get a professional organisation.
Property management companies.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. And that's worked very well all over the county as well. Property management companies.
Mary Malister gets in touch and says, I pay spouse and children tax for the last 15 years. I don't have either, nor plan to have either. Can this be disputed? If I die, where does the money I paid into it go? Does my next of kin, my sister, get it, or does it disappear? Yeah. I said, I'm not sure what this means in terms of spouse. Is it a pension? Or?
I think it's a pension, because it probably is coming up on as one of the deductions on the payslip, and it comes up as spouses and children.
Yes.
And then, so they're kind of two separate schemes usually for pension purposes, often on a public servant or somebody who's a civil servant or whatever. If they have, they'll have a spouses and children tax, and it is obligatory in a lot of those situations. So once you sign up for the pension scheme, you also sign up for the spouses and children scheme, and it's obligatory and you can't get out of it. And that money, if you don't get married or have children, it literally goes back into the scheme on your death. So it is something people can get very aggrieved about.
Yeah.
Now, in some situations where you're working, they will separate it out, and you only have to join the spouses and children if you want to, that it's voluntary. But in other situations, depending on the employment, it's mandatory. Yeah. And you're like paying into the big pool for all the spouses of all your fellow employees
co-workers.
And co-workers, as it were.
If
that's any consolation from that point of view. And also, I mean, one mightn't be married, but one might have children.
Yeah.
And they'll benefit from the children and spouses scheme up till they're finished dependency, you know, age 23 or whatever.
Yeah. Okay, Miriam, what can be done in the case where a criminal damage statement was taken and the Gardaí, in my view, are refusing to investigate it? Is this a one for the Garda Ombudsman, GSOC?
Well, no, I mean, I would have thought, you know, sometimes the investigations take a while for people to follow, you know, for witnesses to be interviewed, etc. So I would have thought a simple, you know, letter into the superintendent.
To see what the status of the case is.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or approach the victim liaison officer. And very often they can explain what's happening in one easy swoop. Very often it's a result of ongoing investigation. And whether it might be the Gardaí themselves are doing it, or is there a file being prepared for the DPP's office? So I suppose until you know what's going on behind the scenes, just inquire further with the victim liaison officer. As I say, if, for example, they refuse to proceed further with it, They don't usually have to give you reasons, but you can apply for, you know, a review in the matter if there's an actual refusal by the Gardaí or the DPP to proceed further. And that's usually where there's not enough evidence to justify public money being spent on it, if you know what I mean.
Okay. All right. Jerry, I'm a farmer with a troublesome, thorny neighbours who get on with no one, not in speaking terms. Their house boundary between that and my field is a rotting fence, so I can't really put cattle in to graze that field. Question for the solicitor: can I erect a thorny wire or an electric fence? If yes, where should I position it? And if the thorny neighbours get the, or their children get scratched on my thorny wire, how would I be fixed legally? Asked this listener.
I think he's probably knows himself the answer there. The thorny wire, even though their thorny wire neighbours, thorny wire isn't a good idea for anyone anymore. But as you know, as we all know, but you know, the electric fence, there isn't an obligation on the landowner to keep the cattle stock proof, and that's the problem for the farmer here. And he'll have to probably put up the electric fence and put warning signs that there is an electric fence there. He puts it inside his boundary and he's okay.
It's on his land. Yeah, he should be fine.
He should be fine. And just to notify people that there's electric fence, but I mean, people expect electric fences out the country, and just to notify the children in the area and try and ensure the children aren't playing around it. And that, you know, so he's no choice but to put up something like that, because he has to ensure that his cattle don't escape. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Is it important for someone in their 70s to have an enduring power of attorney? What does it cost? And if they don't have it done, what could the consequences be? Like, are the children automatically entitled to inheritance?
Yeah, no, the enduring power of attorney, what that is where you appoint somebody to manage your affairs if you become non-compos mentis. And actually, we all should be doing them. And they're freely available to do now through the Decision Support Service website. And we just key in all our information and we can do our own enduring power of attorney. So like, if I'm out comatose on the table and maybe out of action for months with a stroke or something like that, that there'd be somebody to kick in on my behalf to manage my business and other affairs. So they're a very handy thing to do. And they're not as expensive as they were before, because you can do them through this website, the Decision Support Service, and you just need the MyGov ID, and that establishes your identity, and then you can go in and fill in the forms appointing your attorneys, your notice parties, who your doctor is and who your lawyer is, and then you print off forms to be signed by the doctor and the lawyer. So if people can do it themselves and only have to go along to the lawyer to get a form signed that they know what they're doing and understand what they're doing, it's much easier than it was before.
Yeah.
The problem is not everyone can do that. So they like to go along to the solicitor, and the solicitor then obviously would charge with the amount of time that it takes to set the whole thing up online, and that it can be quite involved. And expensive then. But for some people who are phobic around the computer, it might suit them to go to a lawyer to get it done through them. And obviously the saving costs down the line are huge, because you've appointed somebody from you trust from your family to manage your affairs. They can kick in automatically if you become, you know, not a full sound mind and manage yourself and the affairs. So it's much cheaper appoint an enduring power of attorney rather than having a court appointed attorney down the line. So we should all be doing them, Jerry.
Yeah, we certainly should. And look, that's a good note to end on. We've loads of more comments. We'll have to get to them when you're back in with us on Tuesday the 30th of April, Miriam. So thanks so much for talking to us and going through so many this morning.
Thanks, Jerry. Thanks, listeners. Have a lovely day.
Solicitor Miriam McGillicuddy with us, and she'll be back with us for the Legal Lowdown next month. And keep your comments coming in. We'll pass them on to her in the meantime and have answers for you for then.